Bevor es gleich losgeht, kommen wir noch zum Werbepartner der heutigen Folge und das ist Shopify. Wünschst du dir nicht auch einen Partner an deiner Seite, der dich so gut versteht wie niemand sonst, der den Rücken richtig frei hält und dich unterstützt auf deinem Weg zum Erfolg? Natürlich geht es hier und heute nicht ums Online-Dating, sondern wir reden von einem Partner für dein erfolgreiches Online-Business. Wenn du also auf der Suche bist, haben wir hier vielleicht die perfekte Lösung für dich und zwar ist das Shopify. Zehntausende deutsche Unternehmen vertrauen Shopify bereits. Darunter sind innovative Startups genauso wie Familienbetriebe mit jahrzehntelanger Tradition. Shopify ist die Commerce-Plattform, die das Geschäft von Millionen von Unternehmen weltweit revolutioniert hat. Du kannst deine Produkte auf beliebig vielen Vertriebskanälen verkaufen, von einem persönlichen POS-System über eine umfassende E-Commerce-Plattform bis hin zu Social Media und Marktplätzen wie Facebook, Instagram und natürlich eBay. Mit Shopify kannst du dein Business verwalten und ausbauen, unkompliziert und rechtskonform zugleich, inklusive Zugang zu einer stetig wachsenden Auswahl der innovativsten Funktionen und einem zuverlässigen Kundenservice rund um die Uhr. Produkte präsentieren, Inventur verwalten, Bestellungen und Zahlungen reibungslos abwickeln. Shopify bietet dir alle Tools, die du brauchst, um dein Business erfolgreich zu managen. Und das alles an einem einzigen, vertrauten Ort. So kannst du dich auf das Wichtigste konzentrieren, nämlich dein Business. Teste jetzt also Shopify und bring dein Geschäft auf das nächste Level und zwar auf shopify.de/money natürlich. Gemacht für Deutschland, powered by Shopify. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit der heutigen Folge. Servus und herzlich willkommen in einem neuen Video der Mission Money. Ja, Europa ist unser großes Thema. Seit Jahresanfang ist es quasi die große heiße Geschichte. Und da wollen wir mal drauf schauen, kann diese Outperformance länger laufen oder ist die Show vielleicht auch bald vorbei? Dafür haben wir einen spannenden Gast aus London zugeschaltet. Er ist Portfolio Manager bei JP Morgan Asset Management. Ich sage warm welcome, Mr. John Ingram.
Hello, good morning.
Great to meet you. Yeah, I've said it in German. European share markets, equity markets are year to date outperforming the US. Happens not that often. It happens sometimes. But is there a chance for a longer run?
So I think when you think about long run performance of markets, the largest driving force of that will always be valuations. Markets can dislocate for periods of time. Areas can stay cheap or areas can stay expensive. But if your question is around long-run performance, I think valuation is always the best starting point when we start to think about that as a question. And valuations in Europe look fantastic versus other markets around the world. So the discounts available, which are often in the sort of 10-15% range, are as high as 30-40% in certain cases. So what we've seen year to date in a small performance window, as you reference, is outperformance of European markets versus other markets. But I would put alongside that the importance of flows as well. We've seen investors moving money into Europe so far year to date at a rate that we haven't seen for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we have seen last week a little bit of trend change in the US, better than expected earnings, maybe geopolitical risks are not that shaky, maybe it's not a big deal. So will I would say Wall Street come back in a way like last week? Spill the party in Europe?
So I think when you start looking at small periods of time like weeks, it obviously becomes very difficult to draw too many conclusions. More recently, the big moves we saw in April were very much a reflection, though, of either the uncertainty or the removal of uncertainty around what's going to happen with tariffs. It's clearly a hugely important focus for the markets. It's hugely relevant for European companies. It's relevant within Europe because at the moment there are supposed different rates for different countries within Europe, depending whether they're part of the EU or not. And so as that picture becomes slightly clearer, it's certainly not clear yet, but it's moving in that direction, markets were reacting to that. And so we will get volatility. We will get a lot of, on a 1 week, 1 month view, up volatility. That can be opportunity. It doesn't necessarily need to be bad news. But whilst we're reaching a point of getting more clarity, I think we are going to see moves and opportunities opening up.
Is MEGA, so-called Make Europe Great Again, the new MAGA, or is it more like a funny media story?
Well, when you say Make Europe Great Again, I mean, if you think about from a stock market point of view, a lot of people think, you know, Europe's performed less well than the US. But if you look at the absolute performance of European stock markets, they've been very good. If you ask a typical investor what their expectations are for returns in the stock market, if you look over hundreds of years of data, stock markets have generally returned something like 7% annualized. And if you look at the European market, it's done that or better over pretty much every time horizon. And those recent time horizons include the Russia-Ukraine situation, they include COVID, they include the Eurozone crisis, they include the great financial crisis. So whether you look at 5, 10, 15, 20 years of data, Europe's really performed as you should expect an equity market too. The comparison obviously is to the US, which we have to acknowledge has performed at a level almost unseen in history in terms of probably 15% annualized returns over the last 14 or 15 years. And so in terms of, you know, returning Europe or this narrative about Make Europe Great Again, from a stock market point of view, the performance of Europe has actually been probably in line with everyone's expectations throughout the recent period.
Yeah, but if you look on macro perspectives or outlook, it is, at the moment, Europe is not a growth story.
Yeah, but the companies that are based in Europe are. And, you know, whichever part of the market you look at, we have a large number of fantastic companies based in Europe, which sell their products not just to Europe, but around the world. And if you have a great product in the age that we live in, you can sell that product around the world. Now, that links back to where we started this conversation in terms of tariffs. And, you know, is there some implication about how attractive sales into the US are going to be going forward? And that's certainly in the unknown category at the moment. But generally, you know, a domestic GDP number or something as simple as GDP does not map on to profit growth for the companies based in that region.
Yeah, but we saw a little bit of a hype about the new German government and the new idea of fiscal spendings. Is there a chance that this hype get a thing for the European area?
Well, I think it's with all these things, when people talk about, you know, what is hype and what is real, there are some real numbers behind this, and the numbers are not small numbers at all. So is there going to be a knock-on implication or knock-on impact to the economy within Europe, within Germany specifically? Absolutely. You know, these numbers are big numbers, hundreds of billions of euros, and both defense spending, but also infrastructure spending, which then trickles down into the economy. And, you know, what Europe's doing now, of course, is what other areas of the world have been doing. If you go back to, you know, the COVID payments that we had in the US, those are designed to be paid into the economy to then trickle down and roll out through the economy with a multiplier effect. And so if we can see the same within Germany, absolutely, from a macro point of view, you know, macroeconomic point of view, that will have some impact on the economy. Now, that may be greater felt within domestic companies, which might favor smaller or mid-sized companies more than their international counterparts. And that's certainly an area of Europe we think looks particularly interesting, those smaller companies who do have more domestic exposure. So that's what we're looking at the moment.
Is it possible that this all leads the euro era to a growth path?
Absolutely. That's what it's designed to do. I mean, if you think about the scope that the people have in Germany, obviously it's a large change in mindset from where Germany has been for a very long time. But that's exactly what the plan is designed to do. It's designed to stimulate growth by starting spending, I say, focused on defense and infrastructure, but those will multiply through the economy. And the clear intention is to bring greater growth to Europe.
Hmm. What do you think are the biggest risks we see for European equities? Is it just Trump and tariffs?
I think that's in the uncertain category. As portfolio managers, we always have to think about both sides, what can go right, but also what can go wrong. So we have to look at tariffs and whether the EU is treated more harshly than some of the competitors of the EU. So if you're a company based in France, are you going to get a worse tariff than your competitor based somewhere else? And if so, how do you mitigate that? How do you deal with the implication of that? Do you have a product which is superior, or is your product very much identical and you compete on price? So if you're a quality company, again, you should be able to compete in terms of product. And certainly a sector such as the luxury goods is a great example of that. You know, that's a sector that's flourished for 20, 30 years within Europe by producing superior products. And again, if you're a company that can focus on your product being superior, the tariff and the price elasticity around that is probably going to be of less relevance to you than a company making an identical product and trying to sell it at a slightly cheaper price. So tariffs is certainly an area of unpredictability. We also have interest rates as an uncertainty. If you think about the ability of the stock market to perform well, a large part of the recent strong performance of the market has been the banking sector. Now, we happen to think the banking sector still offers very good value, even after the rise that it's had. But interest rates are very important for the banking sector. And if we go back to the days of negative interest rates, that's obviously a much, much more difficult environment for banks to produce profits in than the more normal environment we're in at the moment. And if I look at fixed income markets, they suggest the normal range of interest rates we find ourselves in now is what is set to stay looking forward. But obviously, if you're a CEO of a bank, you'd be far happier that the fixed income market is correct than a return to the days of zero interest rates or lower.
Yeah. Hopefully we don't get this times back. What would you say are the most attractive markets in Europe? Is there a bigger difference because of different pace of growth? Or is it just the companies that work very, really well?
Yeah, we focus very much on companies. There's very little to distinguish between the countries. Yeah. Obviously, you know, there can be times in the economic cycle or the political cycle where there is individual country risk. But by and large, we start at the very bottom and work our way up. So we start with a company. We're looking for great businesses at the right price. And we find those in every country in Europe without exception.
Yeah, okay. Are there some more favorable sectors at the moment, or what is the most attractive play at the moment? Is it more a defense play? Obviously not a growth play.
Well, I mentioned before the banking sector, but I'll give some more color maybe in line with your sort of style based question. So obviously it's a cheap sector and it has been cheap for a long time now. It's sometimes hard to square a sector being cheap with a sector where a number of the stocks have gone up 200, 300, 400%, even 600%, I think, in some cases, since 2020. So it can be difficult on the face of it to say, well, these companies still offer good value if they've gone up so much. But obviously, how much a share price has moved up is a function of two things: its share price today and its share price from where it started. And the share prices where they started in 2020 for us was the exceptional number rather than the current number. So we personally would look through the recent strong share price performance of these companies, just look at the absolute valuations. And you can still buy a large number of European banks on single digit price earnings ratios. And a number of those companies are returning to you as a shareholder more than 10% in some cases through dividends and buybacks this year. So, you know, the banking sector for us offers numbers which are very attractive. And of course, to understand how they're doing that, Given most people, when they hear the phrase European banks, thinks, oh, that's what caused the crisis. That's a sort of negative perception, or they have a negative perception of that sector. Is, you know, for 8 years we had negative interest rates. And if you think what that means as an operating business, as a bank, it meant that every time they won a new customer, if you moved your current account to a bank, they actually lost money on that. And so what that forced the banks to do was to modernize, was to become incredibly efficient with very disciplines around costs, to digitalize their businesses. And so what you're left with now are really very well-run, very efficient companies who, through regulation, have been forced to be very conservative with how they deal with their balance sheets. And that was a business that was built through that negative interest rate period and built to still survive through that period. And now if you introduce a more normalized period of interest rates, obviously this is an industry that for hundreds of years has been a vital part of an economy and has a huge moat around it. Most of us won't leave a bank to join a startup bank. We want history, we want brand around our bank. And so if you put that combination together and we stay in a more normalized interest rate environment, these companies can continue to pay very nice dividends as well as buying back shares at a valuation which we think we would have to call cheap.
Hmm. Are there more sectors you're interested in, like financial sector?
I think the other sector we'd highlight is the technology sector in Europe. I mean, if you think globally, the best performing sector sector and region, if you like, in the last 15 years has been the US technology sector. Now, what I think is interesting about that is if we understand why it did so well, in simple terms, it's because these US tech companies, the Mag 7, for want of a better phrase, are typically very asset light. And what I mean by that is when they win a new customer at the top, they don't generally have too many extra costs associated with winning that. So if you compare that company to a manufacturing company, if a manufacturing company doubles its number of clients, it probably needs twice as much steel, twice as many workers, twice as many factories. If you are one of the Magnificent Seven companies, whether you're Netflix or Google, you can double your number of companies with very little extra cost taken on. And that's been hugely successful for about the last 15 years, let's say. But more recently, those very same companies in the US that were doing so well have started to spend hugely on AI. So they've taken a huge amount of those profits, and rather than just returning them to shareholders, they're investing in AI. Now, the return they're going to get on that money, I would say at this point in time, is uncertain. If you compare that to the European technology companies, they've really started to look at what's been happening in the US, and they're modeling themselves far more, I think, on where the US tech market was 5 years ago, which is, if I've got a great product that I can scale without taking on too much costs, that's a very, very good and attractive investment. And we've seen the European players not invest nearly as much money into AI. And I think there's two reasons for that. Firstly, of course, there's a wait and see mentality potentially to what the return economics actually look like. But secondly, there is a quite large difference between US tech companies and Europe tech companies, which is that the largest US technology companies are typically what we'd call B2C businesses, so business to consumer. So you and I are the underlying customers of those companies typically. If you look at the largest European technology companies, they typically are B2B businesses. They sell to other businesses. So we're not the customers of almost any of the largest European technology businesses. Now, if you think what that means in terms of their AI, obviously as a consumer, it's very important to have good brand, good perception, good excitement around what you're doing. Whereas if you're a business, you're probably looking at more metrics. You're looking at, will this help grow my revenue? Will this help lower my costs? And so just given the sort of journey we're on with AI, you can see why the consumer-focused companies are having to spend more money to be perceived as the leader within AI, whereas the business-to-business businesses, which are typically the European tech names, are maybe waiting for more tangible output. And which, again, that for us makes the European technology sector look very interesting right now.
Are you interested in cyclical sectors, or is it too early in the economic cycle?
I think within any sector, there's always some more interesting
opportunities
areas and less interesting areas. So look, we are a very well-resourced team at JP Morgan. We have analysts that cover every sector. We have a huge number of portfolio managers looking in smaller areas, whether it's smaller companies or value companies, growth markets, etc. So no, look, my team's mandate is unconstrained. We look everywhere. And if you take cyclicals as an example, we think there's more interesting areas in the small cap names than large cap names. You know, small cap is something where the valuation discounts are even greater than they are in European large caps. And at the margin, those smaller companies typically are more domestic. And so you generally, the bigger you become, the reason you become big is because you become international and global and have markets or clients all around the world. Now, if you look at the stimulus in Germany, for example, it's going to be felt far more keenly by a company with 100% of its sales in Germany than a company with a completely global footprint. And so, yes, when we look at some of the stimulus that's coming to Europe, we look at some of the beneficiaries of that, we certainly think it makes some of the smaller cyclical names more attractive.
The time we are talking, you are in London, the government of the UK and the European era are talking about a trade deal. Do you think that can help both economic areas?
I mean, look, what's happening with trade around the world is certainly the most uncertain I've seen in my investing career. So I joined JP Morgan in 2000. So in 25 years, I certainly think I can't recall a period with so much uncertainty, not just involving the US, as you say. So look, as portfolio managers, we have to understand, what do we understand with certainty? What's important, but we don't have certainty on? And all the trade deals at the moment certainly come into that second category. And it's for us to, understand what's the range of outcomes and to build a diversified portfolio that we believe can stand up to any of those. And that's what we're spending our time doing.
And that's what all investors have to do, of course.
Yeah.
John, thanks for your thoughts and your time.